Hey, everybody. It's Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's August 1st.
Yeah. You were going all gentle with that. I thought that might have been your radio voice, your NPR voice.
Well, because when I'm when I'm enthusiastic, yeah. you make fun of me.
No, what are you talking about?
So I thought I'd change it up a little bit so I didn't get made fun of for a change.
I'm just teasing you.
That'd be
nice.
What are
you talking about? I'm just teasing you.
But yeah, it's August 1st today. It's like, you know, it's like the hottest month in Florida, but... you know, the sooner August comes, the sooner August will be over.
Yeah.
and then it will be September, and then it will be Halloween.
Yeah, it's the dead of summer.
Which, you know.
Dead of summer.
Fall can't come quick enough, even though it won't be that much cooler, but...
It does cool down, though.
A little bit.
It cools down.
A little bit at night.
Yeah. In the end of this month, it'll still be pretty hot. The month after that, it'll be pretty hot, but not as hot as this month. It does start to cool.
Yeah. Like I said,
it's kind of gradual. And then all of a sudden, you have real cool days.
Yeah.
It'll be hot. And then you have like 3 days of cool. And then it gets hot again.
Yeah.
And then like 2 or 3 days of cool. And then it gets 4 days of hot. It just kind of comes and goes.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is here.
I mean, yeah, it's mostly just hot all the time.
I've been standing outside boiling hot. And all of a sudden, a cool wind goes and blows the whole fucking heat away. And it's cold for days. That's usually because the storm's coming.
Yeah.
But it'll be hot, and it's like somebody tripped a switch. You'll get hit with a cold blast of wind, and it'll be cold for days. Well, not cold, but cool, like in the 70s and the 60s.
Yeah, which is comparatively.
Comparatively, cool. It feels like, whoa, man.
Grantham's Hammer said cool breeze today in Michigan. Wow, that must be
yeah.
nice. It rained earlier here, like it wasn't like a really bad storm, but I think it was up in the 90s, and then there was a little bit of rain. Now it says 89, yep. And it says mostly sunny.
We went out last night.
Yeah, I just went to Mannequins for a little while.
Mundanes. There was a lot of basic bitches there today, last night.
There really were.
But they said Friday was fantastic, though.
Yeah.
We should have gone to the Blood Fest. What was it called?
Bloodbath.
Bloodbath, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we should. Well, you know,
there's fake blood everywhere still on the walls and shit.
Yeah. Well,
it's speckles of it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they said it was everywhere, but I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Well, you know, it's like we could have gone Friday night, but I was just so fucking tired.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd been up since like 5:30 in the morning, and it's like, then we did the show that was 3 or 4 hours, and I was just kind of like, man, I'm just so fucking sleepy.
Yeah.
I'm always sleepy.
All right, 3:10 to Yuma. Saw it for the first time. Somebody sent it to us.
One of you guys sent it to us.
I think it might have been a Louie.
Oh, yeah, it might have been. So, yeah, I didn't realize, because I think Esther was just saying in the comments that she likes the original better. This is actually the second adaptation of a short story by Elmore Leonard that came out in 1953. And so they made a movie version of it back in 1957, which I've heard is very good, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is the second one. And this was directed by James Mangold, who did Ford v. Ferrari.
Okay,
He did Logan, Walk the Line, Copland,
yeah.
Girl Interrupted. I think he did also.
I haven't seen Copland. That's supposed to be good.
Oh, I liked it a lot.
I haven't seen it.
I saw it in the theater, I think, when it came out.
Yeah,
it was like a while back.
Fat Stallone.
Yeah, yeah.
He got fat for that role.
Yeah.
I should see that one.
He pudged. You'd probably like it. I remember it being really, really good.
Yeah, Ford versus Ferrari is a masterpiece.
Yeah, I loved that movie. That was really, really good.
Great movie.
But yeah, so it's the same director as this. This came out in 2007. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, like, I'm not, like, Westerns aren't my favorite genre, but man, this was a really good movie. This is a really good movie.
It's pretty good. I liked it. It's kind of like in the, like a Sergio Leone type spaghetti western type.
Yeah.
Which they're good, you know, good and bad, the ugly type of deal. But it had kind of had an interesting story about bravery and trying to live up in the memory of your boy, sacrificing your life to be a good example, you know, trying to save your honor. It had some pretty good themes in it. I liked it.
Yeah, I really liked that. I liked the juxtaposition between Christian Bale, who plays like the good guy, and then Russell Crowe, who plays the bad guy. He's like the outlaw. But then Russell Crowe's character, Ben Wade, he's actually...
He's kind of a good guy too, though.
Sort of, but I mean, he's really, like, he's a really interesting, like, charming, yeah. compelling character, which makes him, like, a really good antagonist, I guess. Yeah. And I just liked the way the two of them, like, played off each other. Because yeah. it's funny because poor Christian Bale's character, whose name's Dan, right? Dan Evans. And he's just really been, you know, kicked in the balls by life, pretty much. I mean, he was in the Civil War. He got his foot shot off, right?
Yeah, by his own guys.
By his own guys, so it's, like, not even...
Nobody knows that, though. That's a secret.
Yeah, because, well, yeah. Because, you know, he wanted it to be, like, oh, he was in the war and he got wounded in the war, but it was just, like, it happened in, like, a stupid way. It was, like, friendly fire.
They were
fire.
Retreating.
Yeah. And so he got his foot shot off. And then, like, he's got a wife and a couple sons, and they live on this farm. There's a really bad drought. They're really behind on their debts. You know, so he's just, like, trying to be a good guy and trying to, like, provide for his family, but it's just kind of, like, all these things are conspiring against him. So it's, like, you know, he borrows, like, all this money from that Hollander dude, right? And then at the beginning, like, Hollander comes in and is like, hey, fuck you, and, like, lets all his fucking cows out and then, like, burns his barn down and shit like that just to be a dick. And they're like, yeah, I'm gonna burn your house down if you don't, like, pay your debts back and blah, blah. So that's kind of how... Dan gets roped into, well, he doesn't get roped into it, he kind of volunteers. They're trying to find, because he meets up with Ben Wade and his gang, you know, they're robbing a stagecoach and they kill pretty much everybody except for one dude.
Yeah, they were killing, they fought a bunch of Pinkertons.
Yeah.
And some people don't know what Pinkertons are, but if you don't know what a Pinkerton is, back in the 1800s, the ultimate law enforcement agency that was around in the United States was a private security company called the Pinkertons. It was called Pinkertons Investigation, Pinkerton Security. I think
it was Investigation something. I've been wanting to do a show about them, actually.
They were so good, of course, that they were hired by all the presidents. They were the Secret Service for the president. They were cross. The president of the United States would hire them as kind of like Secret Service, and they also did things that kind of like the FBI would do, and they would also do things that like Delta Force would do today. Yeah. And they had spies, and some of them were female. It was the Pinkerton agency was fascinating. You could make a whole movie just on that agency. And it didn't play by any rules. They recruited guys from law enforcement, military, and convicted criminals and prostitutes and just, they got talent wherever the talent was. They didn't care. As long as they felt they could trust you and you were talented, you could go work for Pinkertons. Which that's kind of like one of the big parts in this, one of the big elements in this movie is this, that this bad guy, this train robber, I guess he's not just a train robber, he's everything.
He's just an outlaw.
Yeah, and he's
super famous. Like, yeah. Everybody knows who this dude is.
He's a really good gunfighter, and he's real treacherous. Organized criminal.
Oracle says there's a Pinkerton series on Netflix based on the real cases.
Oh, that's probably
pretty
good.
Ooh, we even just have to watch that, yeah. Actually. I didn't even know that was on. There's so much stuff on Netflix, it's like it's stuff gets buried, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I can see that.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that.
What I was getting at was the good guys in this movie that are after this bad guy, once they catch him, he kind of exposes all these so-called good guys. He knows their history and where they came from. He didn't like Pinkertons. He didn't like cops. Back in this era, chances are your sheriffs and his deputies, they also had criminal pasts too. You know? Because there was no way to keep track of anybody's true identity. You could change your name.
Move to another state and change your name and nobody knew jack shit.
They didn't even have fingerprint technology. You could claim to be about anybody. And if you want to go after criminals, you're best fucking hiring guys that know how criminals think, which is an honest criminal. Somebody who used to be a criminal, but you can trust him. You know, he'll work for money and he'll, you know, go after another criminal. Because a milquetoast type dude doesn't have the knowledge and the skills that a criminal would have, like where to hide and who's who in the underworld and stuff. So,
plus, you kind of know how to think like a criminal.
You
know,
think like, yeah, you go, well, where would I go? What would I do?
Yeah.
You know, and it's that kind of stuff. Now, you don't really necessarily need that, you know, that kind of talent today because of modern technology, but back in those days you did. And they didn't have the concept of felon back then. A guy could do time, and when he got out, he was a full-fledged citizen again. He could go buy guns, he could do whatever he wanted. So he could join the cops. Now, if he was a really bad guy, he would never get out of prison, because they'd hang him.
Yeah.
Because they hung people for pretty minor stuff. Well, stealing a horse was basically attempted murder, so they hung you for that.
Yeah.
Because if you stole somebody's horse out from underneath them in the West, that was killing them.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. And they had, but they also did a thing for stealing cattle. But stealing, in a way, is attempted murder in the West. Because everybody needed every fucking thing that they had.
Yeah, that was, and some of their, like, the cattle and stuff, that was your livelihood.
That's your livelihood.
So take them from the people and they're gonna...
Taking money from people and cows from people is the same as taking life from people. You know, they couldn't pay their bills and bad shit would happen to them. So, if a guy got out of prison, chances, he was eligible to become a cop.
Yeah.
Because if he was really bad or really bad, he'd have been dead. They'd have hung him. An example would be John Wesley Hardin. He killed a whole bunch of dudes in gunfights, but it was considered to be self-defense. They were trying to kill him.
Yeah.
They were trying to kill each other back then. All right. He got out of prison and became a lawyer. And so he was an attorney. You know, a lot of people don't know that. John Wesley Hardin fucking killed a whole... They say he shot a man for snoring, which there's more to that story than that.
Oh, Esther said, Jenny, your shirt is awesome. Thank you. I just got it yesterday.
Yeah.
I was very excited when I saw this. Like, I was like, yeah. Oh my God, I have to have that.
Shot a man for snoring, but it was an accident. It was on the other side of a wall. There was a dude snoring over there. They were all drunk. He shot at the wall and accidentally
shut up!
Yeah, he did it while he was drunk and half asleep. Shot the wall. Well, the bullet went through and hit the guy in his sleep and killed him.
Well, at least he quieted him down, though, didn't
it? Yeah. Hardin rolled back over and fell asleep. They found the body and woke him up, and he was in bed with a pistol fucking sleeping. They said, you killed a man. He goes, no, I didn't. He goes, I just shot the wall. He was snoring, and he killed him. And he goes, it was an accident. It was an accidental homicide. He didn't even do in time for that. But if I can remember correctly. But he got out and became a member of the court. So that's just the way it was back then. And these dudes are trying to hunt down this wanted criminal, but this wanted criminal goes, yeah, well, he was killing women and children, fucking Cheyenne women and children just a couple of years ago on a job for somebody or other, you know. Wiped out a whole bunch of people. And he goes, well, they were scalping people. No, they were Apaches, as they were. And he goes, they were scalping railroad workers, though. So, you know, it's just... Everything was gray. Everybody in this movie, except the good guy, even he might be kind of gray. It's not so black and white.
Although he was kind of like... I think the reason that they had that was because they were showing, like, Christian Bale's character, who was, like, the only one that did the right thing every time, even when it didn't benefit him, and actively, like, fucked him in the ass.
Yeah, that's right. He was the only guy that actually kind of had honor. Yeah.
Yeah, because he always did the right thing. Like I said, even though his whole life, like, you know, life was just shitting on him all the time, yeah. And... his son, particularly his older son, who was kind of an asshole, didn't really respect him.
Yeah.
You know, just, he thought he was weak.
Right. I forgot about that.
You know, and it's like, you know, he's broke, and it's like he's, you know. So, and he couldn't, like, stop, you know, the dude that he had borrowed all the money from. He couldn't stop that dude from, like, burning the barn down, and he couldn't, like, you know. So the son ends up following them, too. But that's how... that's how Dan, Christian Bale's character, that's how he gets involved in capturing Risk, because they come across, like, the stagecoach robbery or whatever, and then Ben seems to, like, I think he doesn't, like, he kind of, like, takes a shine to Dan, I guess, because he knows he's, like, he sees that he's, like, an honorable guy, so he doesn't, like, kill him or anything like that, and then, so Ben ends up getting caught eventually, and because of something that Dan did, he kind of, like, kept him in one place until the cops could get there and arrest him. And like I said, he's this super famous outlaw. So they're going to transport him to this town called Contention, and they're going to put him on the 310 to Yuma, like, to the prison. That's the train that he's got to get on to go to the prison. So from, like, the first quarter of the movie is kind of, like, build up, like, the stagecoach, you know, robbery and all that kind of stuff. And then they start on the journey, like, where he's taking, like, all the shit that happens. Like, and the gang is coming after them, like, to rescue Ben and everything. So, and it's just kind of like, and Alan Tudyk is in this as well. He's not in it that much. He plays, like, a doctor when they get to this one town. But it's always good to see him, you know, from Firefly and Tucker and Dale versus Evil. He was in that as well. But, I think the whole thing... It's almost kind of like the whole thing was Dan's quest to, like, raise himself in the eyes of his family. Because I kind of feel like his family kind of looked at him like a failure of a man, you know what I mean? Because he always did the right thing, but he was always getting shit on by life. And so, and the fact that, like, his wife and his kids were just kind of like, ugh. So I think that he just wanted to show that, like, you always have to do the right thing, even if it costs you everything, which it does end up doing. But I guess he did it all, like, for his son, so his son could be like, hey, my dad's awesome. You know what I mean? Whoa. So I just really liked the juxtaposition, like I said, between his character and Russell Crowe's character. Russell Crowe's character is like, he's a villain, but he's also like kind of like likable.
Yeah. Man, I wish I was Russell Crowe.
Not nowadays, because I think he weighs like 4,000 pounds.
Yeah, I'd get skinny. But fucking Russell Crowe, if I was Russell Crowe, I'd just fucking throw phones all fucking day long. I'd carry phones with me.
And just have like a backpack full of phones.
Just throw a phone at somebody.
Just at random people.
Yeah, I just go up to the fucking I would just fucking every time I would go to a hotel, I'd just go up to the front desk and I said, "Can I see the phone, quick?" They hand me the phone, just throw the phone. They're like, "What the fuck?" And I set it up. So I'm like, "Hey, my buddy, get his camera, record this, watch this. Excuse me, can I have the phone, please? Thank you."
You could, you want to hear something sad? You could probably make a whole YouTube channel of just guy pretends he's Russell Crowe throwing phones at people.
Yeah.
And you'd probably have like millions of subscribers.
Yeah. Well, you don't even have to throw the phone at people. Just throw the phone.
Shouldn't throw the phone at people because then you'll get arrested.
Every time they give me a phone, I just throw the receiver. It's on the fucking wire and shit. It's on the right.
Oh, yeah,
be funny.
It would kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, people probably get pissed at you for breaking their phones.
You'd be watching the series to see me throw the phone. It'd be the Throw the Phone Show. That's the name of the show. Throw the phone.
Well, you know. Throw the phone.
Throw the phone.
Just all one word.
Yeah, throw the phone. Crazy shit.
Well, and you could even, like, change it up a little bit. Like, so you could, like, one show, you could kind of, like, pretend that you weren't going to throw the phone. So it's like there'd be suspense. You know what I mean? Hey, people have, like, dumber YouTube channels than that. Yeah. Like, I was telling you last night, I watched an hour-long video of a girl cleaning out her gross refrigerator. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I wasn't just sitting there watching it. I was doing other things, too, at the same time. But it's just kind of like, I don't know. There's something, like, really compelling about that.
Yeah.
But, all right, so somebody said,
there's a bunch of comments up there.
Yeah, I know. Did anybody see the movie Snowpiercer? Yes. Yeah, that was pretty good. Weirdest train movie I've seen is that Tom Hanks animated one. I kind of want to watch that just because I've seen clips of it and it's like so Uncanny Valley. It like freaks me out. I think Welcome to the Basement did a review on it like around Christmas time because it's a Christmas movie. And they were talking about how atrocious it was. And not just because the animation is super weird looking, but they're also like, the story is just kind of like...
Lou Hernandez was up in there and he was saying that he didn't send this movie to us, but it's a good movie.
Yeah.
And then he said, I would like Copland. He said it was a great movie.
And yeah, you should, like I said, I saw it in the theater and that, and I then I saw it once subsequently. So I've seen it a couple times, but it's been a long time.
And Grampers is in there. For those of you who don't know, he's a guy I went to high school with. He's a retired law enforcement now. And he said that he once applied to the Pinkertons because it's the headquarters is up there in Michigan, but they didn't answer back.
I didn't realize that they were still around.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And he was just saying that the cops of that era was just more like a hired gun. They were more like mercenaries. The sheriff was just a kind of like an elected official for a town, and then he just hired basically mercenaries. And deputized them. Those were the deputies. You know. But It's just a different way of hiring, the same kind of thing that would happen now. But they didn't go to, like, law enforcement training schools or anything. It was all on-the-job training. It was kind of like nightclub bouncers with guns and horses. But some of them had military experience, and some of them had been, you know, came from Indian territory, you know. Some of them might have been Indians or half Indian. It's never really like what you would think it would be. If you go back and you get some old books and you actually look at the photos of the way these guys looked, it looks like a cross between Mexico and old California, and I don't know. The poverty level looked almost like something out of India in a certain way. There was something always kind of malnourished. They all looked kind of malnourished.
Well, they're all out there on the plain and the prairie, like eating hardtack and shit like that. I don't know, whatever, and beans.
And I don't think city life for poor people was much better out east, because there was all the, can I have some more porridge, sir? And all that kind of shit. You know, they were those kind of people. But they all looked malnourished to me, real narrow shoulders, skinny and pot-bellied. Yeah, and if they were old, they were just a belly.
And just one big belly.
Belly with little stick arms and legs coming out of it.
I just thought of just like a whole belly with just like the head down here.
And you never really could tell what they were eating, you know?
Like the woman from Slither.
They were eating bad stuff. And then you go, he's an old man. And then you fucking, the age is given underneath him. He's like 35. But he looks like about 65.
Yeah.
They live fucking real, they didn't live long.
Road
and they
hard
pretty rough.
And put up wet, as my grandma used to say.
And the guys that were all fit were in their teens and early 20s. And they looked pretty fit. Suits and shit. Running around fucking guns and suits. And you age like, you know, 25. But he looks like a 35-year-old or 45-year-old almost. It was just a different era.
Everyone's very grizzled.
Yeah.
Rickshaw says Midnight Meat Train is the best train movie. I still got to sit down and watch that. I read this story. It's Clive Barker, in case anybody didn't know. And it's like, I've been wanting to see, because I feel like there's, with Clive Barker stories, the adaptations can, like, they're either really, really good or really, really shit. And I've heard that one is really good, and I keep wanting to watch it, and then I just keep forgetting about it. I think it's on Tubi, so I might get around to, like, seeing it. Oracle says, I believe the Pinkertons are now more of a high-tech security firm. There's a branch of the agency in my part of Texas. Okay, so see, I didn't even realize that they were still around.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I've been wanting to do a show about them. Like, I put it in the poll, like, the topic poll a couple times, but it didn't win. So, I don't know. Maybe we can, like, we'll do one of these days. Or we can talk about them on a sidetracks or whatever.
They're in there talking about the Old West.
Yeah. Their diet was venison, whiskey, and hardtack. Yeah, probably true.
Prairie dogs. Eating a bunch of prairie dogs. Who knows what kind of parasites they had carried, too.
Yeah,
they probably were all had a lot of parasites and shit.
Oh, yeah, I imagine.
Tapeworms and stuff.
Because it's like, you know, it's not like they had super clean water or anything like that, or good medical care or anything. Yeah, Camp Guy said, I think the Pinkertons run an armored car cash delivery company. Yeah, that's kind of that's kind of in this movie, that's what they were doing, except it was like a stagecoach. It was like an armored stagecoach, wasn't it? And they were taking money. I don't know where they were going, but they were taking like money somewhere. And then, I guess, I didn't realize this when I was watching it, but when I read the Wikipedia thing. You know how at the beginning, like when Hollander like lets all of Dan's cows out, those cows were what the gang, like, they found the cows, they're like, oh, how fortuitous, and that's what they used like to block the road.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So yeah, so that's how the two of the big, and that's how they met up, because Dan was out there looking for the cows that the asshole had let out of the barn, and that's when he came across the stagecoach thing. And I was like, because I don't know, for some reason, like, I didn't link those two things in my mind until I was like reading the plot synopsis.
I liked the movie. It was a good Western. I wouldn't say that it was like a epic legendary Western. It's like not on par with like High Plains Drifter or anything. But for a newer movie, yeah, it's good. Real good.
Yeah, and like I said, yeah. this is I don't know if I'd necessarily call it a remake, because it's just another adaptation, because there was one that came out in 1957, which, like I said, a lot of people seem to like that one, too. But I've never, and some people, like, you know, Esther said she likes that one better, but I haven't seen that one. But yeah, this one was, like, it's definitely, like, more character-driven.
Yeah.
It's, like, a more character-driven Western. But that said, there's still, like, a lot of gunfights and all kind of, like, crazy shit happening in it, so it's still, like, exciting, and it's pretty, like, well-paced and everything. I wanted to say, too, it's funny, because 2007 was the same year, there were, like, a couple other Westerns came out that year, too. There was, like, what was that one? The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. And then there was one other one. So I think, like, when he was putting this one out, he wanted to, like, make sure, like, he put it out before those other two, because he heard that there were all these other Westerns coming out. And he's like, oh, fuck, I gotta be, like... So he had to, like, put it out sooner. Because, I don't know, it just seemed really weird. There seemed like a little mini-boom of Westerns, right, for some reason, in 2007.
It's hard to beat some of those Clint Eastwood Westerns.
Well, yeah.
I mean... High Plains Drifter and Outlaw Josie Wales. I can watch those movies over and over and over again. Just the whole things are just a damn meme in a way. You know what I mean? Every line in those movies is fucking epic. Especially High Plains Drifter, which is basically like the Wild West version of The Crow. This motherfucker back from the grave to get his vengeance.
He's a revenant.
Yeah. And it's not totally obvious. You just have to pay close attention. I didn't realize it was a supernatural story until I got old enough to understand the symbolism of shit that it was doing.
Yeah.
I just thought it was, yeah, he's killing this because of what they did. And he doesn't look exactly like the sheriff, but that is the sheriff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Phil says they had a bar rag for the cowboys to wipe their faces, and they shared it and just passed it down the line. They had such skin problems, that's why they wore mustaches.
Yeah.
Well, they're probably being out in the fucking weather all the time. You just, like, looked like fucking leather.
They didn't have the same standards of physicality or sanitation.
And yeah.
They said the prostitution fucking situation was horrible, you know. Terms of diseases and just uncleanliness and just...
Well, yeah.
They didn't... It was the Victorian era. People forget that this is the Victorian era. So they had no... They had no sex education. Sex was whatever they thought it was. I mean, you can dig up fucking 1800s fucking Wild West style porn, and you're like, there's absolutely nothing sexy about it. They look like fucking mugshots of the dead. Just some naked chicks just laying there, you know.
Some like necrophiles might be like, ooh.
Yeah. That was cowboy porn. Old West porn.
Well, I guess you kind of had to take what you could get. It's not like they knew what they were missing.
No,
necessarily.
There was no. I saw some commentary on it from psychologists and stuff, and they were kind of talking about the sexuality of the time. And they said that they had no concept of sexy. That is a learned behavior. In other words, like poses and shit like that. That was high-tech shit. And they think most of that, of the concept of sexiness, really was a commercial effort from corporations that was selling packaging and booze packaging, and they would give these saloons paintings centered around booze, and it had some girl in there. And they eventually figured out that you had to put them, started off in kind of Roman style art poses, yeah. Roman and Greco-Roman style, but then it got slowly a little more sexier over the time. And that's the only thing, that was the closest thing, guys, in the Old West, and even probably in the United States, that was the closest thing in the Victorian era, that they could ever get to, say, like, sex education. That was their sex education. It was just damn paintings and saloons.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
There
was no porn industry. You had girls that get up on stage and sing. They called them stars, but they were hookers. But here's the thing. They're always showing the saloon with women in it, and that's an inaccuracy. Women were not allowed in saloons. Even the hookers were not allowed in the saloons. The hookers were in the brothel.
This is a dude-only area.
For some reason, they had no problem with prostitution, but they couldn't have women in the bar.
Yeah.
But they had alcohol at the brothel. But the brothel was more kind of like a hotel.
Yeah.
With a parlor in the front of it. So, the whole thing about these hookers hanging out in the casino that's happening inside the bar, nah, that wasn't the way it was. They kept all that shit separate.
That's pretty funny.
I thought it was indecent to mix all that.
Except at the brothel, that's right. Fine, but it's like, keep these ladies out of my bar.
Well, I think when they were shooting westerns in the 50s for television and stuff, and the silver screen, for budgetary reasons, it's better to shoot all that in one location.
Yeah.
You know, because the average person didn't know. But no, they didn't mix booze and women in the same spot.
Oracle said there's a TV series you might be interested in called Dead Still, about a Victorian photographer who specializes in photographing the recently deceased. Ooh, that sounds like right up my alley. I'm going to have to... Where is it at? Is it on like Netflix or Hulu or something like that? I'm going to have to check that out. Yeah, Camp Guy said, I never had to tell my kids anything. They had seen it all on TV and the movies by the time they were 8 or 9 years old. And then Phil's talking about spittoons.
Yeah.
How they didn't clean them. They just put sawdust on top of it, and the guys would spit tobacco on the floor. Yeah. That just makes me want to throw up just, like, reading that, honestly. Yeah. But, yeah. All right, so it's on Acorn, I think. Oh, okay, so I'm going to have to look that up. I'm going to look that up, Dead Still. Because that sounds really good. And something that I would definitely enjoy. All right, so... Bone Tomahawk was awesome.
We
did a review of that a while back, right? Because we have that, actually.
They do make some good westerns every now and then. It's just they're becoming rare.
I liked, there was one called, what the fuck was the name of it? Oh, god damn it. I'll probably think of it in a minute. Nick Cave wrote the screenplay, actually. Fuck, what the hell was the name of that thing? That was, like, really, really good. But, because he does a lot of music, like, him and Warren Ellis, I feel like, do a lot of music for Western type movies because he's like really into those. But yeah, they have made some really good ones. Some people were saying earlier that they were saying what their favorite Westerns were, like True Grit or, you know, The Searchers, stuff like that. But
yeah. I didn't see those.
Yeah, because, you know.
True Grit, that's John Wayne, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's John Wayne in it. Yeah. Yeah, did somebody tell me? No, they didn't. Okay. I was trying to, what the fuck was the name of that goddamn movie? I can't believe that I can't think of it. Shit.
Dogs are out there going crazy.
They are, yeah.
What, is it Western?
Yeah. It came out back in, probably right around the time this did, or maybe like a little bit before. What the fuck was the name of that? It was like super, super violent, because of course it was, because Nick Cave wrote it.
I didn't see it.
I can't think of what the name of it was. Oh, well. I'll have to like
look
it up.
Another one that aged pretty well was Unforgiven.
Well, yeah, I really, really liked Unforgiven.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Sleazy B said, I hate Westerns, but liked this one called Wild Bunch. Yeah, I've seen that one. I feel like I've seen that one. So it's weird because I kind of feel like...
Sleazy B needs to see... if you hate Westerns, man, you got to see High Plains Drifter. Because it's supernatural. That's a fucking badass flick, though.
Yeah, I even like that one. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Westerns, but now that I'm thinking about it, I've actually seen like a lot of really good ones, so what the hell am I even talking about?
Even Pale Rider's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd probably put it as High Plains Drifter, and then right underneath that would be Outlaw Josie Wales, and then Unforgiven, and then Pale Rider. That's the order that... Although the Sergio Leone ones were good, too. They're just kind of a different tone.
Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly, somebody said. Yeah. All right, so The Proposition. Thank you. I knew somebody would come up with it. It was called The Proposition. Thank you very much, Scoop Dog. Because that was going to drive me crazy that I couldn't remember. Because I wanted to run out and see it. Because I was like, oh, Nick Cave wrote it. And I'm like a big fan of him. So, you know. But yeah, it was really good. Like I said, super violent. So, is that all we have to talk about? Because I'm kind of sleepy, to be honest with you. All right. So, we will be back tomorrow talking about some other movie, which we don't know what it is yet because we haven't watched it. So we'll have to watch something tonight. We'll have to find something tonight and talk about it tomorrow. That's what I'm saying. Oh, and also, we have to watch Basket Case because that's going to be our next movie retrospective. I know, but like we got to watch it again for a review. All
right.
But yeah, that's another Frank Henenlotter. It's like same guy that did Frankenhooker. You know what I mean? That's the same like director.
Yeah.
So I've seen Basket Case lots of times, but we're going to watch that tonight too, or tomorrow night, and then record it. All right, so we will be back tomorrow talking about another movie at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, in case you didn't know. And that'll do it for today. Bye.